Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 398. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Shahid Abdul Hadi. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing fine. I hope you can hear me well. It sounds like you're talking while you're on a surfboard with the Fonz.
Wow. Well, I am jumping the proverbial shark, I take it.
Like, I can hear you fine. It's just like a lot of static on my side, so.
Yeah, it's, well, I don't think it's coming through on this side, so hopefully we can muddle on through this one.
Okay.
But we decided before the show here that we'd start with the oldest to the newest. I guess I could start off by saying, one, Jeremy Mays was not a fan of Fastlane. Does your opinion differ from his?
Yes, I'm probably not as negative on the show as him, because although I am a fan, I am not a member of the Braun Strowman Big Man's fan club. So him having a great match and losing to Roman Reigns bothered me, but not as much as it bothered him. Like, I know he was not a fan of that finish. Me is kind of like, I know people were saying, oh, well, I can't see them having Roman Reigns beat him and win clean. And I'm like, this is Roman Reigns we're talking about. Like, we've been doing this song and dance for a while. So don't be too surprised when you see Roman Reigns win, because that's what Roman Reigns does.
Yeah, I mean, Strowman, for better or for worse, the WWE doesn't tend to change its path when it comes to WrestleMania. Like, the Daniel Bryan thing is really unique amongst, WrestleMania pushes, in that it got determined after, like, truly after the Royal Rumble.
I think that was a case of, like, they didn't have a choice because their match just got crapped on so much, where it's like, we gotta change it or WrestleMania is gonna be hijacked. This one is like, I know the argument was always, so will be Roman Reigns and Undertaker. I'm like, there's a reason why Roman Reigns eliminated Undertaker at the Royal Rumble. And it's funny that people were so invested in Braun Strowman that they were mad that he lost, because that's Braun Strowman. Like, I remember him, was it last year at the Royal Rumble, when Brock Lesnar was beating the crap out of him because he wouldn't sell?
Yes.
He was giving him, like, true knees to the back and the side of his head. And we were like, this doofus is going to beat the Undertaker. We're going to be pissed. And now, a year later, we're mad because he's not fighting the Undertaker at WrestleMania, and Roman Reigns is. Just think about that chain of events, how that happened.
I definitely could not have said it any better myself. Because I had kind of forgotten about that. But yeah, I mean, it was barely over a year ago that this guy, was dumb enough not to sell a Brock Lesnar clothesline and got his ass kicked for his ways.
For his transgressions.
Yeah, that's a better word. So, yeah, I mean, it's great that he came this far. I mean, there's only so many guys that are that big, and they do end up, I mean, it's kind of like Big Show. Like, you've almost got to write excuses for why they lose matches. Because, I mean, I know that Big Show isn't that way now, but when they had him, like, there was always some type of interference, or there was always some kind of shenanigans going on when he lost. And Strowman hit four posts and missed a splash.
Yeah, I was like, Jared was saying this whole thing, like, you know, Roman no sold a table and hit a move. And I'm like, no, Braun Strowman was basically Wile E. Coyote. And that's why he lost the damn match. It wasn't like he slipped on a banana peel. He, like you said, he ran the four posts and missed a splash and got hit with, like, what, two or three Superman punches. And it's like at least one spear. I think the second or third spear it took to beat him. Like, Braun Strowman didn't lose anything from losing this match. It wasn't this whole thing where he got squashed or was clean. It was kind of like they had a great match. He just made one mistake. Well, he made five mistakes, and Roman Reigns was able to capitalize. But it's funny where between that and how the whole thing went off at Raw, like, there was a lot of people just disappointed at Braun Strowman. And that shows you that people care about Braun Strowman. It's like, kudos to WWE that people care enough about him to be mad about the fact that he lost. Although, yeah, you kind of seen it rotting the wall. Like, if you think people are mad now based on what happened on Fastlane, imagine how people want to feel by the time SummerSlam comes along.
What's supposed to happen at SummerSlam?
I can make a guess on what's going to probably happen at SummerSlam, because SummerSlam is Brock Lesnar's pay-per-view, and Roman Reigns didn't beat Braun Strowman for nothing.
And he's not going to beat The Undertaker for nothing.
Yeah, like, he's going to be, by the time he steps in Brooklyn, he's going to be the most hated man in professional wrestling, because people are going to have an idea how that's going to go. And, yeah, they're going to... I remember when The Rock fought Brock Lesnar a long time ago, and people crapped on The Rock because they knew he was going to Hollywood. I could just imagine that times 1,000. Like, that asshole Brooklyn crowd in the main event, knowing he beat Braun Strowman and he probably beat The Undertaker, fighting Brock Lesnar for the title, like, that is not going to be a pretty match whatsoever. Unless they're just going with, you know, Roman Reigns just being a heel. And they pretend he's a babyface. That's the only way I can see that works the way they want it to.
I mean, if that is how they end up rolling, it's just one of those things where it's kind of funny. Like, they kind of know their perceptions out there, and they're doing it anyway. And they know that they're going to get, especially at a crowd like Brooklyn or even L.A. where they held some SummerSlams, they probably would not have gotten a good reaction from doing this.
So, but it's kind of like, you know, they're stubborn, and they feel like it's a reason they're pushing Roman Reigns. My whole thing is, you're not doing him any favors, push him as a babyface this way. Like, he's not going to be like beating people that people like more than him. If you want to push him as a heel, this works perfectly. Him being an asshole, getting beat up on Raw every week, and then getting a fluky win on a pay-per-view is not going to endear him to any fans. Like, the whole breakdown with him and Braun Strowman was hilarious. Like, basically for a month, he'd come out, he'd talk trash, he'd wait for Braun Strowman to have a match, then he'd try to jump Braun Strowman like a coward and get beat up. Like, that happened like a month straight.
Yeah.
Why am I cheering Roman Reigns? Like, he's trying to sucker punch Braun Strowman, and then he's not even doing that the right way. Like, if you're gonna be evil, be effective.
Yeah, it's just, well, it's funny how many of those guys are on Raw, honestly. Just because everyone on SmackDown's just a bunch of assholes themselves, and they admit it at least.
Jeremy says SmackDown was the asshole show. But it's funny where at least they embrace it, and it works for the character, because I know we're jumping around. Like, it's funny where you had a match in the main event with AJ Styles and Randy Orton. It's like, AJ Styles is the asshole heel that gets cheered no matter what he does. Randy Orton is a sociopath that gets cheered. Like, people point out, like, he burned somebody's house down and tried to burn the ashes of a dead woman. And he's the hero of this story. Like, what story are we saying on SmackDown? Like, yeah, between... Like, we have traditional heels like Becky Lynch. I mean, not Becky Lynch. Like, Alexa Bliss, that's She's an awesome. She's basically like Trish Stratus when Trish was a heel the second time. Like, she's just an awesome. She gets booed the right way. You have bitter ass Dolph Ziggler, like Tom Pass. He's like Winona Ryder and Black Swan, like Tom Pass me by, and I'm just hanging on. And I'm getting mad at all these young people who's getting a chance. Like, don't try too hard. You'll be just like me, disappointed. Like, that's just hilarious. They're pushing that with him. And, you know, you got, like, The Miz, basically. Like, you have heels like The Miz and Baron Corbin who are supposed to be heels and get treated like heels for the most part. But then on Raw, it's like, who's likable?
Yeah, I mean, that's the only reason I kind of went into the SmackDown part, because, yeah, like, a lot of the baby faces, I mean, Roman Reigns is one of them. Like, because, again, like, they're putting him against The Undertaker. They keep on putting him against guys that he's going to get booed against. And it's just like, okay. You know.
I mean, you want this guy to be the next John Cena, but you thought a good idea for him to be he has to be going heel, or it is extremely obtuse. Because I was there at the Royal Rumble in San Antonio, and people, not only did you have him coming at 30 instead of all the people you thought were going to come in, like Samoa Joe or Nakamura or anybody else, you had him coming at 30, and then you have him eliminate The Undertaker in Texas, and you think he's going to get cheered? Like, they had to know. Like, it's like, I know the idea, and I know people talk about, like, we wanted to have the idea that Randy Orton would get cheered somehow, and damn it, it worked. But you still leave with the fact that you had Roman Reigns get booed. Now, all of a sudden, like, no one's going to do this whole Passion of the Torch thing if he beats The Undertaker. Like, Undertaker shaking his hand and walking away. They're going to crap all over that. Like, and I know this because when they tried it with Rock and Cena in New York, and no one was having that. They're like, and The Rock was kind of like, he just shows up once a year. But even then, it's like, no, we know what this is, and we don't buy it one bit. And at least that's John Cena who put the work in. Like, Roman Reigns, like, no, it is not going to end well.
Oh, man. And I guess I could have looked at that, too.
Although I did laugh when he came out, first when Braun Strowman came out the end of Raw, talked his trash, Undertaker came out, Braun just looked like, nah, I'm okay. I got more important things to do. I'll find some girls on Tinder, more or less. And then Roman Reigns just comes out and does what he does best, talks his trash. Like, I came out to call out Braun Strowman. I didn't call you out. So, basically, get lost. So, when he got chokeslam, it's kind of like, I won't lie, I laughed. That's what you get.
Yeah, that is what he deserves. Because, like, I mean, he just isn't, that likable, and, I guess, you know, this was another one that, Bayley, like, they've not made her unlikable, but they've put her in a really horrific spot trying to defend her character, which she can't really do at all.
Yeah, it's either she's an idiot, or she's devious, and neither one works for her character, because it's kind of like, I was watching the pay-per-view at work, so I was driving home near the end of that match, so when I caught the whole thing with Sasha Banks, I was thinking, like, why is this not a disqualification? Like, how does she just get the running ring, interact with Charlotte, and the match just keeps on going, and everyone is saying, like, oh, well, you know, oh, it is what it is. Like, since I'm watching it, I'm like, what? Like, what did you? I know the whole idea is, like, people assume Charlotte's going to win because she always wins at pay-per-views, and they want to, like, you know, I guess pull a fast one, but it's got to be a better way of doing. Like, that didn't make anybody look good. Like, it just made the ref look stupid. It made Bayley look weak. It justifies Charlotte complaining, and it made Sasha Banks look like a conniving. So,
yeah, and then they don't play either of them like that. Like, I guess I didn't expect Bayley to give up the title, but this week she just still is like, nah, everything's cool. And it's just like...
I mean, I get her whole thing, but it sounds like, you know, sometimes in wrestling these things happen. I'm like, that's not her character, where it's kind of like, oh, well, I found this dollar on the street. I know this bum dropped it, but I'm going to keep it because it's a dollar. Like, that's... What would Izzy think? I always, like, you know, I always think that, like, if she was watching this, she'd be disappointed. Like, her dad would have to explain that she'd be disappointed because it's just... And then it doesn't help that Stephanie McMahon is so damn overbearing.
Yeah. She... Because that was kind of funny when Cam put up that poll about the qualities of Stephanie McMahon. Her in that situation just has not been good. At any point in the entire Women's Revolution, her TV time with them has been a vast net negative.
I have to agree 100% because she doesn't come off as sympathetic in that role. She never gives any shine to anybody else. It's always, I got to get the last word. I'm better than all of you. I'm going to emasculate you or make you treat me like a skill. You're not the boss, Sasha. I'm the boss. And look at you, Bayley. You're just a fan. It's kind of like, but no one can get any. Like, at least when she was doing that with the Bellas, like, they had a match. Like, at least, Brie Bella. It's a shame that Brie Bella got more payback than any of the other women, currently. Like, it's just, and then I was laughing, like, because I watched old Attitude Era stuff. Like, people tend to forget, like, yeah, Stephanie McMahon used to get, like, beat up, either by accident or purpose, between, like, interacting with Kurt Angle, and especially The Rock and Steve Austin. Like, yeah, that whole getting some of my face usually ended with a stunner or a rock bottom of people's elbow. And now it's like she just walks off with her music and everyone has their head down. And people on the internet complain, rightfully.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, that's another story on Raw that just, again, if someone... I mean, I guess Charlotte's being an asshole, but... You know, it doesn't suit Bayley's character, and you know, on the other side, you mentioned her, at least Becky Lynch. They do kind of have some wholesome characters, and Lynch is one of them. But they really are just not telling the story well for Bayley at all.
I think that's just that's Raw in a nutshell. It's like, Raw and SmackDown both tell stories. It's just SmackDown tells theirs a lot better, and you like to tell, like, the whole thing, like, not just with Roman Reigns, but with Seth Rollins. Like, why am I cheering him? Like, I get why am I cheering him, but Triple H came off when he cut that promo, like, you know, I just show up at work, and I gotta wear this stupid tie, and I'm just trying to do this for the people, and you keep pissing me off and everything, and now you're talking about you're gonna come to my house and see my kids. Like, yeah, I'm cheering for Triple H in that case. And Samoa Joe coming up, beating up everybody, and basically backing up everything he says, I'm cheering that. I'm not cheering Seth Rollins, like, the doctor said I shouldn't come back, and I'm not going to come back. And then Triple H talks trash, and all of a sudden, like, I don't care what the doctor said. I'm coming back anyway. And I don't know if it was on purpose or because it was Chicago, but... Between Stephanie and Triple H, it had to be some digs at CM Punk. Especially that, well, Stephanie's was more direct because it's basically like, you know, you keep cheering for this guy. Like, Chicago keeps cheering for losers. And I was thinking that, too. I'm like, he's been gone for 3 years. Like, enough is enough. Like, that was getting on my nerves. But Triple H going on and on about how great a doctor Seth Rollins got and how he got the best medical field in the world. Like, it's not coincidence that they're doing this in Chicago with all the stuff that happened with basically CM Punk and the medical team. Like, I was thinking that. I don't know if I was supposed to be thinking that, but he was just, it was just something about the way he was just going overboard. Like, he's got Dr. Such and Such. He's got the best doctor in the best medical field, and he's got the best care, and yada, yada, yada. I'm like, out of all the cities, you say that in Chicago. Even though it fit the storyline, I was like, it's just sometimes, you know, it's the little things.
Yeah. They might have fudged this storyline enough to make sure that this came up right at that time. They might not have been planning it, but once the injury came into being, the plan was hatched. And I didn't even think about that aspect of it, honestly. Just because, I mean, I don't feel like, did that much really come of that issue? Like, I remember it being an issue on Cabana's podcast, and then I don't really remember much of a resolution.
It hasn't been. I think it's still a lawsuit open. It's kind of like, here's the thing people don't understand, is where if the fans didn't bring it up, WWE would keep it moving. They would not mention CM Punk or talk about CM Punk. They would just treat life like it is. But every time they go to Chicago, they got to get the chance in. And then you know Stephanie's going to say something because Stephanie's petty and she can't help herself. And it was irking me where the whole, like, that Brock Lesnar-Goldberg segment, like, Goldberg comes out, they're chanting Goldberg, they're chanting his name, they're chanting the music. As soon as the music ends and he starts talking, they start booing him and chanting for CM Punk. What did Goldberg do? Like,
yeah,
you know, and I know I was talking to Dan. Dan was saying, like, it's good for the fans. They're cheering for a guy and not the company. And I'm like, that guy's home with his wife. He is not thinking about the fans in Chicago. Like, it's, and I made the joke saying, like, if I went to a New Edition concert and I got mad tomorrow, I want Bobby Brown. Whose fault is that? Is that New Edition's fault or is that my fault? It's kind of like he left. He's not coming back. He doesn't have any reason to come back. He's enjoying being independently wealthy with a beautiful woman, doing whatever he wants. He's not thinking of taking bumps against Sami Zayn or, you know, Nakamura or anything like that. So it's been 3 years. Like, let well enough be.
He's, for better or for worse, he's an MMA fighter. I would say it's
you know, whatever you say, but yes, that is true.
I mean, that's his profession. I mean, he doesn't give, like you said, he doesn't give a shit about the fans. Like, it's pretty clear he isn't, like, at least within some time period, he isn't coming back. Like, he isn't one of those guys that I'm like, oh, yeah, I see him coming back sometime soon. Like, he's probably, like, he seems like one of those guys that doesn't want to rebuild that bridge.
Yeah, I mean, that's, he's basically, like, one thing about, I'll say about him is, he used to seem like the type, but not only holds a grudge, like, he has principles he sticks to. I mean, as far as what he said, it's kind of like, you know, I'm going to do this my way or the highway. And if you can afford to, there's no reason for him to build that. Like,
no.
From anything we've seen from reading about him and the DVD stuff, he doesn't spend his money on stupid stuff. He doesn't live an extravagant lifestyle. You know, he made quite a bit of money in a short time frame. He seems to be doing fine with money. So, yeah, it's like, and then the more time goes by, the older you get. Like, you, although we might miss him thinking about all the matches he could have with all the people that's there now. And it's like, you know, the older, it's like that whole thing with Steve Austin. Like, you know, when Steve Austin comes back, like, one day you wake up, realize Steve Austin is in his 50s. Like, that ship has sailed. And it's like, you know, we can stop booking that whole dream match. And if he comes back for one more match, it's like, if it was going to, sooner or later, you just wake up one day, realize they kind of aged out.
Yeah, I've got to admit, like, I feel like WrestleMania last year, when he didn't have anything, I'm like, oh, that's it. Like, there's just, like, if there was a chance, that was it, and it didn't happen, so it is 100% not happening at this point.
Yeah, like, CM Punk right now is 38 years old. Like, 38's not old, but 38 is not necessarily young either. Like, you know, he's basically around the same age as John Cena and Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar wrestles part-time. John Cena is basically wrestles part-time, too. It's like,
yeah,
once you hit that age and you're successful, it's kind of like, Yeah, I can relax. Unless you're like getting pushed in like a main event thing, is like, yeah. So, but I don't know. Like, let that be and focus on the other people there.
Oh,
and speaking
yeah.
of, like, it's amazing where who would have guessed that Goldberg would be the world champion going in? Like, who would tell you, like, Goldberg and Bray Wyatt are your world champions going into WrestleMania? How weird does that sound?
Well, even when Goldberg came back, like, the idea of him being champion was not something that crossed my mind, honestly. I figured he'd be in a number of big matches with, the names. And that would be sufficient. Like, I wouldn't care. Like, he doesn't need a title shot to be Goldberg, really. So, yeah, the fact that he is the champion is pretty strange.
I mean, it's funny, like, it's a cliche thing. It's the fans' fault, but not as a bad thing. Like, I don't have a problem with it. It's kind of like, he came, the fans embraced him. What else? It's kind of like, normally, they would be like, nah, we're going to do what we want to do. This one is like, you know, we got something, let's use it. And they have done that before, for better or for worse. They did that with Finn Balor.
Oh.
For the better, so he got hurt. They did it with Hulk Hogan, and that was for the worse. You know, when Hulk Hogan came back, and then all of a sudden, that WrestleMania thing with The Rock, and next you know, a month later, he's world champion. Because of Canada, more or less. And so, and sometimes it's like, we got something hot, let's use it. Like, you know, I know the argument is always, and especially it's noticeable this year, where a lot of the WrestleMania matches are going to be part-timers and old people involved. And it's like, where are the young stars? As a fan, it is not up to me to care about young stars if they don't make me care. Like, they're supposed to make me care about them. If they book Sami Zayn wrong, that is not my fault. So I would like, you know, if they book, you know, Seth Rollins wrong or Roman Reigns wrong and Undertaker's more popular than that, that's on them. I'm going to still enjoy The Undertaker. Like, yeah, it's funny. I saw a video on YouTube, and it kind of, like, fits to my point, where it was like this Indian businessman, he had a wedding, and he had the whole setup like he was Triple H. Like, he came out with a belt. He had the sparklers out there. He had the music spin out the water, like, walking down the aisle, like he's Triple H. Triple H is popular. Like, you know, Joel Embiid's he said his favorite wrestler growing up was Triple H. He grew up in Cameroon, and his favorite wrestler is Triple H. He came out to Sixers games spitting out the water to Triple H music after Triple H, you know, was following him on Twitter. They were going back and forth. It's like, these old, like, Goldberg was the biggest thing going when I lived in North Carolina back then.
Right.
I know it's this whole idea of, like, you know, who likes Goldberg. A lot of people like Goldberg. A lot of people like Brock Lesnar and Triple H, and everyone likes The Undertaker. And for better or for worse, and I know people don't want to hear that, and it was a joke about the whole AJ Styles, Shane McMahon thing, it might not be the match that people may want to watch, like, internet-wise, but that's going to make AJ Styles a lot of money, and a lot of people like Shane McMahon. Better for worse, and I'm actually looking forward to that match and see how they set that up. But it's based on, you know, if they don't make me care about the new people, I'm gonna care about the old people at the end of the day.
Oh yeah. And it's because and I'm trying to think of which we were more talking about the Goldberg situation. And it's just, that's one of those ones that, that's the biggest stage that they can put that title on. Like, I guess because there does seem to be some anger about that, about Goldberg taking the title from Owens, which, that was another one where, I couldn't you see that coming?
Yeah, it's like, once they said, you know, Goldberg and Lesnar was wrestling at WrestleMania, you kind of put two and two together, because we just saw that with The Rock and Cena and CM Punk, where CM Punk had that belt, and the main reason he had that belt for so long was He's going to lose to The Rock. We need him to keep that belt until he loses The Rock. And people were pissed. And it's like, you can be mad at the storyline, but don't act like you don't know why it's happening. Like, you know what's going on. Like, it's a reason. Like, Cena, if you're going to do Cena Rock 2, you got to have a reason for them to do that. Rock being right. champion is the reason. Sorry, CM Punk, you just happened to be the wrong place at the wrong time. It's the same thing with Kevin Owens. It's like, you know, once they were going to have that match at Mania, and you kind of knew there's a pay-per-view in between. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not only with that, and it's kind of like Kevin Owens dealt with not only Goldberg being popular, he dealt with the fact that they have to set up Roman Reigns again. So.
And, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Because it won't come into effect that much, maybe, at WrestleMania. But with Samoa Joe helping him on Raw this week, I mean, there could be something more long-term in this for Owens, who, you know, obviously was... it seemed like there was... They teased a term between Jericho and Owens a number of times. And you knew it was coming at some point, and it just, you know, it came before the pay-per-view that he was going to lose at, and it made sense to have Chris Jericho be the guy that helped distract Owens to lose the title belt so that he can at least, you know, do what he did on Monday and save a little bit of face and say that if it weren't for the distraction, he would have outlasted Goldberg and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, and it's just funny where that whole storyline became a thing because Chris Jericho was so enjoyable. Like, if you really look at it, he's the number one babyface on Raw. Old-ass Chris Jericho. No. Like, for the first time in his life, he's the undisputed main babyface on Monday Night Raw. It took almost 20 years, but he finally made it. Like, that's just strange, and it's like, at least they could have pushed it to the wayside, but a lot of it's just like they have a lot of people where the dance card doesn't have spots for them. Like, you know, think about what's Braun Strowman going to do. You think about what Luke Harper's going to do. Like, they were in important matches coming up to WrestleMania, but like once WrestleMania comes, it's like, what are they going to be in the Andre? But like, John Cena is wrestling a mixed tag match. Just think about that. Like, he's basically having a mid card match with his girlfriend against The Miz and his wife, because they don't have anything for him. He's part-time. And that's John damn Cena. So...
Good luck, Braun Strowman, yeah, Luke,
like,
Harper.
Kevin Long, good, happy that you're actually on the card and you have a match. Like, you know, because that's going to be a high-profile match. But...
right.
Yeah, it's kind of... It's a lot of that. Like, even... The New Day is the most popular tag team they have, and they didn't have anything for them, so they've been having them do this ice cream shenanigans. And if I see Big E hump that ice cream cart one more time, I'm going to lose my damn mind.
I don't know why that's one of those ones that I'm just like, I didn't really need to see that. Like, I guess normally I'd find that entertaining, but for some reason the lust in his eyes just throws me off.
Oh, you mean a 340-pound guy in a singlet humping and licking the ice cream cart is disturbing? I wonder why. Like, yes, it is this. I'm watching it, and he's got the Walking Dead glaze in his face, and he's licking the cart, and he's just... And it, even Kofi and Xavier's telling him to calm down. Like, I don't know. Does he love... Like, what is in that damn ice cream? Like, it is... Like, normally the New Day stuff is, like, funny, or even then it's kind of, like, harmless fun. He's uncomfortable watching that. And then that match, that pin he had.
The pin. I guess I don't mind some uncomfortable comedy. But, there are some moments that I still don't want to see.
Yeah, I'm like, that's going to be scarred in my memory for a long, long time. And the whole tag thing is funny where that Cesaro and Sheamus are finally a team, and they got screwed. Like, it's funny, Lawyer, by the time they get along, they don't have the belts anymore. Enzo and Cass just gets on my nerves. And not even Cass. Enzo gets on my nerves so much. It's like, he's the guy that just keeps talking, starts a fight that can't finish, keeps being, you know, keeps starting stuff that he can't handle, and Cass has to save him. And it's like, sooner or later, that's going to lead to, you know, somebody getting turned on the other person. But it's like, they're better together than apart. But I just laugh every time Enzo gets beat up, because it's just, he deserves it.
Yeah, and I mean, his ring skills are definitely questionable, which doesn't help him at all. I guess I'm surprised. There are a lot of guys, you know, around his size, like even Daniel Bryan was kind of in his range, and I mean, he kind of found a way to, not kind of, Bryan found a way to add weight here and there to try and keep up with the grind. And yeah, Enzo just needs to do that to try and get some type of semblance of, like, I mean, he never has offense.
Yeah. You know what's funny? And I was talking with somebody else. He's the first full-time wrestler that I can remember in a long time that is that small and is that bad in the ring. Like, you normally don't, like, no. WWE, when they have bad wrestlers that get an extended period of time, they're normally, like, big. Because it's right. Not like, and the reason, like, oh, you know, they're big, they need time, but they're getting pushed because they're big. They normally don't push young guys who can't wrestle and not, like, body beautiful. Like, you know, because he's small, but he's not, like, cruiserweight ripped small. He's like regular guy. Like, he doesn't look weak. He just looks like a regular guy. Like, he looks like a regular guy with a doofus haircut that can't wrestle. That's a bad combination. So, like, imagine a cruiserweight who couldn't wrestle. Who would you have? You have James Ellsworth. Just think about that.
Is he heavy enough to qualify as a cruiserweight?
I don't know. That chin probably helps him get under that 205 level. Not having one helps. So, yeah, it's just, they don't, and I know why he gets pushed, because he's popular, he gets over in the mic, and people said, I know I made a joke saying they're like the New Age Outlaw, but the Road Dogg could wrestle at least. It's like,
oh, yeah.
If you can talk all day long, but if you can't even be a passable wrestler, then you're not going to cut it.
I always think of Road Dogg and him being the first guy to just hold on to the bottom rope.
Smart man.
It did help that he was kind of tall. Like, you know, yeah, like you said, like, Enzo isn't, like, Jack Gallagher isn't that big, but at least you kind of tell that he goes to the gym.
Yeah, like, it's nobody in the cruiserweight division that I'm looking at kind of like, oh, they need to do some crunches. And I mean, even like, you know, the, like, Mustafa Ali's and everything like that, it's like, that don't show their stomach. It's kind of like, you can tell they, like, at least fit. And if you couldn't tell, you can tell by their moveset that, you know, they're fit and they can wrestle. Like, Enzo just, like, I just laugh. Like, Cesaro always had this look like he really wants to smack him in the face in real life. Like, no matter if it's a storyline or not, like, when he knocked it to him and got the call with the shirt, Cesaro's reaction was just hilarious. Like, he just had enough. Like, him and Sheamus, like, and the fact that he was jumping on Cesaro's back and he just waited, and then Sheamus just kicked him off his damn shoulder. It's kind of like they trust each other enough, like, get this fly off me for me. Because Cesaro could have easily just bumped into him into the post or throw him off. He basically, no, I got something for you. Wait 2 seconds. And Shane just kicks his damn face off. So he has that glazed face. And it's kind of like that team got far enough where they trust each other to do that. But, you know, Anderson and Gallows are the tag champions, and they made them boring. Like, ever since they got away from AJ Styles, they've been the whole calling people nerds, losing to the New Day 9 straight times before finally beating somebody else, and then getting beat up by Roman Reigns and singing handicap matches. It's like, Yeah, no thanks.
I guess Enzo and Cass, they're like another pair of the good guys that just aren't that likable on Raw. Again, to kind of go back to that theme.
You've
stated the case.
Yeah, like Cass is there defending his friend's honor, but like even before the stuff now with, you know, screwing Cesaro and Sheamus, all that stuff with Rusev and Lana, like he was trying to knock down another man's wife, and even though like Cass was like, "What are you doing? Like this is not gonna end well. Cut it out." And he like, bada boom, I got to get in the room. And like, you know, it's, yeah, like, it's funny where they want you to like these people, but they don't give you any reason to like them on Raw. And SmackDown is the complete, and it's amazing that because SmackDown's the complete opposite. Like, you care about the baby faces because they make you care. Here, I don't think it's a real baby face that I like, that I want them to succeed. Like main event wise, because I look, not even men or women, because they have made all of them look bad.
Yeah. I mean, since we kind of started that theme, I figured we'd keep on going with it. Because and you kind of mentioned the women again, like Natalia has finally kind of found a spot, finally. Like, that...
She's in...
she has, like, moved on from the just hateable because she's hateable to, like, she's actually playing a character at this point that's enjoyable. Even though she's obviously... Like, they're playing her as delusional and it's working well.
Because it's realistic, to put it nicely. Like, I cannot stress how much I dislike Natalya. And I don't know if it's the character or the person or how she portrays herself, but she is just between the they have Total Divas Natalya, and they put her on SmackDown, and it's about damn time. Because I remember watching Total Divas and thinking, this is the most unlikable woman I've ever seen in my life. All walking around, I'm Natalya Neidhart. I'm a Hart. My uncle was Bret Hart. We're wrestling royalty. I deserve this because my last name is Hart. Hart, Hart, Hart. Like, enough is... I know you can do a snap suplex and you're pretty, but enough is enough. Like, it's... She's just so damn overbearing. And it's just... But it's... She's supposed to be because she's a heel and it works. And people call out on it. So, that's the one thing about SmackDown. Like, they're so damn petty. They use real-life stuff to ingratiate the storyline, especially the women. So, her playing that role, like, yeah, it's between this stuff with her, all the stuff they talk about Nikki Bella, like basically hitting Trina like she's just some vapid spinster.
Oh, the stuff with the Miz and Maryse and Cena and Nikki. Oh yeah, you want to talk about just being petty? It's hilariously petty. And just everyone doesn't come off good. But that's okay.
It's entertaining. Like,
yeah,
last
it
week
is entertaining.
When the Miz is going on and on saying, you know, John Cena, he basically said the same thing people have been saying about John Cena. Like, you know, you're just a big hypocrite. You talked all that trash about The Rock, and then you became The Rock. No, you're talking about reaching the glass ceiling, but you step on people's fingers. And then John Cena basically come out saying, if I had all this stroke that you thought I did, I'd be wrestling The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Instead, I wasted my time with you. It's like, they actually said that on TV, and I would just laugh. I'm like, wow, they actually went there. I'm not surprised because SmackDown does that.
Right.
But that one's kind of like, it took some balls to go there because it's like, it's a semblance of truth in that.
Right.
When you think about it.
Yeah. I mean, for as much as The Miz has bragged about that and it's been great, well, it honestly hasn't been great for his character until about this storyline, honestly. Because it was never, you know, like, at least anyone who had any idea about wrestling knew that The Miz really didn't deserve that spot at WrestleMania. And he didn't deserve the win. I mean, The Rock gave him the win at WrestleMania.
Yeah, like, he was basically there as an appetizer. Like, it was The Rock John Cena show. The Miz just happened to be there, which sucks because The Miz was world champ. And he won, but it was like, he was window dressing. But it's just, kudos to him that they rehabilitated so much where it doesn't feel like that much of a downgrade having them interact. It's just funny. Oh. It's just funny seeing that. Like, and
yeah. For sure.
It's weird seeing John Cena and Nikki Bella together, and it's not Total Divas. Like, John Cena acts like he has no idea how to deal with a woman. Like, when it's PG, when it's wrestling shows, because he's like, can I hold your hand? Can I kiss you on the cheek? He doesn't know if he wants to act like he's 8 or 48. Like, their interaction is just weird. Like, John Cena's a weirdo.
Yeah, he seems kind of awkward at this point, because, like you said, he just doesn't seem like he knows what they're supposed to do. Like, SmackDown is a bunch of assholes, but you're still not allowed to get too much nookie from your from your significant other.
Yeah, like, at least they acknowledge it finally, that whole thing in the room. But it's funny when you look at babyfaces in WWE. The last one that was kind of like looked comfortable around women was The Rock.
Oh.
And I like the whole stuff with The Rock and Trish Stratus. I remember watching that tape, and like, it looked natural. Like, no wonder people had those rumors all those years, because it just looked natural. Like, ever since then, whenever they done it, like, the stuff with John Cena and Mickie James, they treated like they were in like eighth grade. Oh, you left your stuff at my house. Like, that nonsense. I can't even think of other baby faces that really had like women extended period of time.
Oh.
Besides, really, Dean Ambrose, if that counts.
Yeah, and it doesn't really. I mean, they shut that storyline down pretty quick. Although it does fit quite nicely with this week's Hall of Fame member.
Yes, it does. One of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And somebody that, one, I thought was already in the Hall of Fame, and two, should have been in a long time ago. That's Ravishing Rick Rude.
Yeah, that was one where I'm like, oh, this didn't happen already? Like, seriously? I mean, unlike Jeremy, I definitely did not like the heels as a child.
It's because you were normal.
Yeah. At that point, I was still normal, at least. But, you know, there were a couple of heels that kind of got through to me, or at least I found entertaining in some way. And the Rick Rude stuff, like, I guess you, even at that point, you kind of understood how angry or why people got angry at him. And he was one of those guys that there were still a lot of guys in wrestling that weren't completely ripped. Like, I mean, we were just making fun of Enzo. And honestly, like, his body type would have been pretty normal back when, when I first started watching wrestling. So, you know, Rick Rude did always stand out to see a guy, and that might have been part of it, just because, like, the guys that were, like, really in shape at that point, you're like, oh my god. And Rick Rude was in the best shape. And you're just like, how can I bag on this guy? That guy is ripped.
Yeah. I remember being a kid and thinking, like, even, because I wasn't cheering for the bad guys, but I always thought Rick Rude was cool. I'm like, he looks like a comic book, and he's tough. Like, you know, he gets the women, but he can fight. Like, usually it's kind of like, you look like, because Rick Martel was in shape. And he was a pretty boy, but he came off like a chump. Like, he never seemed like a tough guy. Like, he could wrestle, but he didn't seem like he was tough. Like, Rick Rude was like, you know, I could steal your girl and beat you up and kiss your sister. Like, all at the same time. Like, it's hard doing that. But it's funny where I liked him in WWF. I loved him in WCW. Like, WCW Rick Rude was just amazing. Like, because one, WCW let you do grown-up stuff. It helped. It didn't hurt where he got to hang out. It's him, Steve Austin, Arn Anderson, Bob. Like, the Danger Alliance was basically like work rate 101. And he's like the king of that thing. Like, he got to work with Sting. He got to work with Flair, Steamboat, and he just had great matches, and he was a badass. And it's a shame. I remember when I used to get the WCW tapes, and then they were like, oh, he got stripped for the title because he used the title Japan and got, you know, disqualified. And then all of a sudden, you realize like a year ago, but I'm like, wait a second. Is Rick Rude coming back? Like, I didn't have dirt sheets back then. All I did was watch on TV. Not realize, like, Rick Rude was basically retired. Like, he got injured, and that was done. And it was like, he was 33, 34 when that happened. And I know he was there in, like, DX, and he was there in the NWO. And it was, and even in ECW, like, it was always bittersweet because he looked like himself, but he couldn't wrestle anymore. But you didn't know he couldn't wrestle anymore. Like, he didn't even mention it until he was, like, NWO, and he was, like, got mad to see, like, Sting was the man that ended my career, and that's when I'm going to get payback. And it's like, this, like, imagine Shawn Michaels getting hurt and never coming back.
And I guess that's one of those things that you kind of mentioned that time period that I didn't watch much wrestling. And I know that you and Steve kind of co-posted that promo that he had for Bash at the Beach. Was it 92?
Yeah.
Because I probably tapped out in about 91 when I moved into high school, and all the other high schoolers didn't watch wrestling, so I had to be cool and not watch wrestling for a while. And I guess it'd be fun, if that was his best stuff, because, I mean, I still obviously just remember him from the WWF stuff, because I did watch WCW for, well, at least as soon as my parents finally broke down and got cable. And I had TBS to watch it, but, I don't ever remember seeing him in that, so I just really kind of loved him from his WWF stuff, and I'll never forget the Jake the Snake Roberts wife stuff. Like, that stuff's just kind of, like, you just remember the tights. Like, I don't remember really what they looked like at all, but the airbrush tights with his wife on, I feel like, were the first ones that...
Yes.
That, you know, he started putting someone else's face that was involved in the feud on it.
Yeah, I remember watching that thinking, like, this guy's a dirtbag. Like, Jake needs to stick his snake on him. Like, because they never did stuff like that back then. Like, you know, when Hogan was feuding, it's funny, like, Hogan and Savage was feuding because Savage thought Hogan was, you know, lusting after his woman. But that was more chase and everything like that. It was like, you know, you figure Savage just being jealous. Like, Rude basically lusting after disrespecting Jake Roberts is something you're not used to seeing, like, Saturday morning.
Right.
So,
like right after my cartoons finish.
Yeah. And the whole thing that was always funny, like, he was this sex symbol, a ladies' man, but you always had the idea, like, he'd rather have sex with himself. Like, he loved himself more than he loved... Not that he didn't love the women, because he did, but it always seemed like he loved himself more. Like, he was just so damn narcissistic. But he wasn't a pretty boy. He was just tough because he was built the way he was built. And I remember I was watching some old WWF promos, like him and Bobby Heenan. They show him getting in shape. Like, he cut his hair. He cut the mullet off. He's lifting weights. He's like basically getting in shape to have the rematch with Ultimate Warrior when Ultimate Warrior was champion. And the whole build-up was, I was the only one that beat you for a belt in the first place. I'm gonna get serious and beat you for the world title. And it was like, he seemed like he could hang with the Ultimate Warrior back when the time when you didn't think anybody else could. And that says a lot considering how the Ultimate Warrior looked back then.
Oh, man. Yeah. So that was, that's an inclusion that, like you said, it was pretty surprising. It is obviously well deserved. I always laugh, like, every year, I'm like, how are they going to come up with this number of people? Because it seems like they're going at about, like, 5 to 6 a year now. And I always keep on feeling like they're going to run out of people, and then they end up pulling some people out that I didn't expect them to have.
I mean, all you got to do is watch the network and realize they got plenty of time. Just think about all the people that's wrestling that, like, The Rock's not even in the Hall of Fame. Just think about that. Like, you have about 7 to 8 people that can headline a Hall of Fame. Like, between The Rock, The Undertaker eventually, Triple H eventually, Batista, Randy Orton, John Cena, like, those guys. And then, like, the Christians and whoever. Like, the fact, like, Beth Phoenix is in. Not, like, no disrespect to Beth Phoenix, like, you know, if they wanted, they could have the Dudley Boys go in 1 year. If they really want, like, Kurt Angle is coming in this year, and it's like, you forgot all about Kurt Angle until you realize, like, yeah, Kurt Angle is one of the biggest stars they ever had, and all of a sudden, he's then. They could do Goldberg next year. No, they probably will do Goldberg next year, more or less. It's kind of like, you know, if they ever...
If it's not next year, it's in the near future.
Yeah, like, you know, Vader, if they ever decide to, like, you know, bury the hatchet with, like, Lex Luger. Like, this people, Sid Vicious, like, it's plenty of names they could do. So, that's one thing I don't worry about. It's just funny just thinking about, like, I thought he was in a long time ago. And I know you didn't watch WCW, like, Dusty has said it, and I said it. From, I want to say, late 88, 89... For me until when, or up until like when Hogan came. So either like 93, 94 is like one of my favorite parts of wrestling. Like WCW was just awesome. Like they had a, beside the stupid booking they had, like they had a combination of like great wrestling and like good storylines and awesome announcing. The booking, if I see one more champion pin himself off a sleeper or a suplex, because I think I saw that twice on one show. And the thing about pay-per-views, like, you can imagine why people get mad. Like, I saw Lex Luger get screwed, like, 4 straight times.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, one was he got cut over the eye, and they stopped the match. One was, I think, disqualification. One was a count-out. One, the horseman jumped on him. It was like... Lex Luger never lost clean to Ric Flair. And I know it's a tangent, but I want to talk about Lex Luger because I know his WCW stuff, like especially the Wolfpack stuff and his WWF stuff has people look at him in a certain way. Lex Luger from like 88 to 90 was awesome. Like he was awesome. Like, he's basically what they want Roman Reigns to be because he came off as a badass. He cut badass promos, even as a babyface and heel. It was funny where he was a heel and he was getting cheered more when he was a heel than he was a babyface. And Jim Ross would lose his mind saying, I don't get why they're cheering Luger. Luger there, he turned on Sting. He talks about the fans, even the ones that cheer on him. These fans cheering on him, they hypocrites. Like, Luger would just come out and just get, and the crowd would just lose their damn mind. And he'd like basically come in like, I'm the U.S. champ. I do things my way. Like, a perfect story I had, he had a match with Ricky Steamboat. And his whole thing is like, I'm the U.S. champion. I deserve better. I'm not going to have this match with Steamboat if it's no DQ. Because that was the stipulation. Like, I'll defend the title, but you got to take away the stipulation. And I'm the champ, so I call the shots. So they asked Steamboat. Steamboat, like an idiot, says, okay, we'll have the match without the stipulation. And then Luger ends up tricking Steamboat into disqualifying himself to keep the title. And it's kind of like Luger came off as like a damn evil genius. Like, and it's amazing thinking about how awesome he was back then when you think about him now. But like, it's, that's the beauty of network, where you can watch stuff like that and stuff that you may have remembered may not have been as well as you thought, and some stuff right. I definitely don't remember. Like, yeah, I could see why certain people look a certain way, and I know people got mad. I was making fun of Ricky Steamboat. But yeah, it's just, it's, that's why I love the network. Like, I've been watching the paper. I don't know why I started watching WCW pay-per-views again. I think it was just out of nostalgia. Uh-huh. But you learn a lot about wrestling. You learn a lot about wrestling and wrestling, especially when you're old enough to appreciate certain things.
Yeah, I know that I haven't watched a lot, because I think that time period that you're watching is like almost all that stuff is what I had on a video cassette, because we'd always record it and then take it down to our friend's grandmother, and she would watch all the pay-per-views the next day, because her and her husband were always into them. So yeah, like that 88, 89, 90, and maybe the beginning of 91, I have a bunch of tapes. But and I think Jeremy and I kind of talked about this with, like, movies. Like, watching movies then and watching movies now, it's an entirely different experience of watching them as a child and watching them as an adult. So, like, kind of watching that stuff, I'm sure, would be completely different. And I haven't watched that stuff in, you know, decades, at least.
Yeah, like, I was, like, WCW, I remember starting watching again, like, around 92. I think right whenever Ric Flair got back to WCW when he left the WWF. So, some of that stuff I remember, but I hadn't really watched, cause I was still watching WWF. So, like, watching it now, it's amazing. One thing you know is they love their cages. Like, they, whether it's a regular cage, a triple cage, War Games. They had one cage look like it was bigger than Hell in a Cell when they had a tag match. Like, it was Flair and Sting versus Muda and Terry Funk. And that cage looked huge. It's like WCW loved their cages. Two, I know we made jokes about RoboCop being in WCW. Actually seeing RoboCop come out to help Sting against the Horsemen, and I'm just watching this, I'm like, you know, I know somebody thought this was a good idea, and I know RoboCop was cool, and I'm like, I can imagine if I was like 35 or 40 years old, and I'm there in the DC Armory, and RoboCop just comes strolls out, and seeing Sid Vicious run away from him, I'm like, what kind of nonsense is this? Like, it's just amazing. Like, it's different when you say it, and then you watch it. Like, and WCW wrestling did a lot of stuff like that, but WCW was kind of weird, like how they did this spectacle and everything. And yeah, like, it's, I always said WWF was great for kids and WCW was for grown-ups, was always my thought process, like during that time frame. And they were both good in their own ways. Well, in ring, WCW aged a lot better than WWF did.
Oh, I'm not surprised by that. Because that was one of those things that even when I came back to wrestling, I'm not sure if I was familiar with the term work rate, but I always enjoyed the cruiserweights on WCW way more than anything I saw in the ring in the WWE for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, work rate's a funny thing where when you're younger, it's kind of like, you don't really notice too much. You just know, oh, people are cool. Like, you know, the Rockers did cool stuff. Hogan was big. Warrior was strong. Like, the Macho Man looked cool. And, like, WCW is like, you know, Sting and the Steiner Brothers and stuff. When you're older now, it's like, you notice them more, but you know, like, you know, like, I know why people talk about Barry Windham being good, but it wasn't until I got older and watched him was like, yeah, Barry Windham was had no business being as good as he was back then, being that size, and, like, he was awesome. Steve Williams, good Lord. Like, I mean, like, it's like, imagine Taz, except for, like, 5 inches taller and 60 pounds heavier, and a better athlete. Like, it's amazing some of those athletes they had, like, them, the Steiner brothers, Luger. Like, I can imagine, like, Sting, before he hurt his knee, I always say he was like Shelton Benjamin with John Cena's body. Like, Sting was an amazing, like, people do not give, I know the joke, like, Sting's trash and everything like that, that joke people make. Sting was an amazing athlete, like, amazing, amazing. Like, the stuff he did, I could not believe watching it. And I remember watching Sting, but I watched Sting post-knee injury when he was still doing, but he was more like power-based. Sting pre-knee injury was, like, moving like a cruiserweight. So, seeing that and seeing, like, imagine you, like, watching, you know, like, NWA, and you see the Great Muta. Like, you've never seen a moonsault in your life. Like, Bobby Eaton was the Rob Van Dam of your time frame back then. And then all of a sudden, the Great Muta shows up. It's like, what kind of, they probably look like, what kind of alien nonsense is this? Like, or seeing the Steiner brothers, like, do stuff like that. Like, that's why. Yeah,
that
I
whole
like
Frankensteiner thing, I just remember going, holy shit. Like, I mean, now it's just like, oh, okay, whatever. But, like, when that when I first saw that move, I was just like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah. Like, the Steiner brothers did stuff that you only saw in video games. Like, I remember they did a move. Like, they did a top rope DDT. Oh, it was a mistake. Because they had to set up like they normally do the Bulldog. And
yeah,
he hit him with a D. I'm like, can you do that? Like, I'm just like amazing. Like, I had never seen that before, and I haven't seen it since. It's like some of those moves you like the Steiner screwdriver. I hope I never see that move again in my life. Because it's like, yeah, some of those moves shouldn't be done for a reason. And they used to do those moves at that size, and that was like back, like the Steiner brothers would be on the same level, if not better, than American Alpha now.
Oh, and yeah.
Jason Jordan is like a college superstar. Gable was in the Olympics. The Steiners were doing that in the 80s, like the late 80s. Like, that's just insane when you think about stuff like that.
Yeah.
And speaking of insanity, a tag team won a tag title.
Yeah, I mean, there were multiple ways to work our way into this topic. It's kind of unbelievable that I guess we should say what actually happened. The Hardys went to ROH and won the tag team titles. And I don't believe it's on TV yet, but I mean, if you have the internet, you've seen this news. So I guess I maybe should have said spoiler alert before it, but whatever. You know it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just bonkers because, I mean, and I'm reading everywhere, it's just like, how could WWE not jump on this train? Like, I've got to agree. Like, the Hardys were smart enough. Like, they came up with this idea, got out of TNA. They're making money with ROH. And people are like, oh, I wonder if they could get a part-time gig with the WWE because they didn't like all the travel. Have you noticed, guys, how many part-timers there are? Including the two guys that are going to main event WrestleMania.
Yeah, like, that's not a thing anymore. I know that whole part-time yada yada, that's not a thing anymore. It's kind of like, if you can get over and make money, like, Chris Jericho is a main eventer with his old part-timer ass. Like, John Cena is the flagship and he's a part-timer. Like, you can do that. I think it's more of a case of, would they even let them do that stuff? It's like, if it would work, it'd be SmackDown. And I know from what I heard, like, Vince knows about it and loves it, which is, I would say, amazing, but Vince is his own kind of guy.
Right.
I'm just laughing at the fact that 2017, Goldberg is the world champion, and the Hardy Boys are one of the most popular tag teams on the planet. With the internet, like, they went to ROH and got treated like heroes. I remember how Matt Hardy was treated the first time he went to ROH. And it was nowhere close to being a hero. Like, it's just amazing. That goofball and that goofy segment just got over.
Yeah. I mean, it did help that even before that, it was just like, oh, thank God. It seemed like, I think when they first went to ROH, it was kind of the height of Matt Hardy is fucking nuts.
Yes. Angelic Diablo Matt Hardy.
Hey, yeah, it's just like, oh my God. Like, you know, it kind of gotten to the point where it's just like, dude, like, this just isn't even funny. This is just really terrible. Like, I hope that you don't hurt somebody. And, you know, him and Jeff have been clean for quite some time at this point. Or at least, you know, they haven't gotten into any trouble. Maybe I could put it that way.
That's a great way of putting it. I mean, I guess you'd have probably heard something by now, because it's kind of like they're high profile. And
yeah,
people are nosy like that. Like, when Jeff was going through his stuff, it wasn't a secret.
Oh, right. Yeah, so, I mean, I hope that everything's straight, that they would be able to compete in the WWE. I mean, it's one of those things that I just don't know how that wouldn't be, like, I felt bad in some ways when the Dudleys came back, because they just, it wasn't quite the right time for them to come back. Like, I don't know how much of a run they really had in them, but, you know, I still think that they could have gotten more out of them. The Hardys, I mean, they were bigger WWE personalities, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. It's weird thinking about that. Like, you think about the Dudleys, you think about the Hardys, and you think about Edge and Christian. It's kind of like the Hardys was the one that outlasted everybody. The Dudleys' biggest issue was that they were a babyface team that had to deal with a heel New Day team that was popular than everybody else. And that's the same thing that happened with the Usos. It's kind of like, if you're a babyface, you face the heels that's more popular than you, and you're dead in the water. And nostalgia only. And it's the whole thing, like, it's a reason the joke they make about the Dudleys, like, they come back and they're stale in 2 weeks. It's, yeah, like, it's a reason why that joke is made. It's like, nostalgia only goes so far. And, you know, it was like the whole thing of the New Age Outlaws, where New Age Outlaws came back, and it wasn't anybody where it's like, we got to get the titles off. Like, we can get the titles on the Outlaws because we don't have really anybody else. When the Dudleys came, New Day was still doing New Day things. So it was like,
well, I think it was just the start of New Day things. Like, I don't think anyone had seen them getting that popular, and it just happened to be when the Dudleys got out of their contracts, and it just ended up being terrible timing. You know, because if they wanted to get New Day over at that time, they had to beat the Dudleys. And then the Dudleys were just, like you said, dead in the water at that point. Like, they come back, you're expecting some type of triumphant return, then they lose. Then they lose the next feud. It's just like, yeah, okay, guys, enjoy.
Yeah, like, if you're not going to win, what's going on, basically? It's like, why am I watching this?
Yeah. So,
yeah, and I think the Hardys probably wouldn't have that problem, because it's like, with the most smack. Yeah, I would say, whatever you do, keep them away from Raw. Like, It's funny, oh. I would say that about Samoa Joe seems to be doing well because Triple H cares about him. So and you can tell like the fact that Stephanie McMahon was going on and on putting over Samoa Joe, and Stephanie McMahon never does that for anybody. It's like they went out their way to make Samoa Joe seem special, but he seemed like the exception to the rule because rest of them is like we've been complaining about him for a good 30 minutes about how they treated Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Bayley, Sasha Banks, and poor Sami Zayn. So,
with that mention of the Hardys, then I think it's about time to wrap this puppy up.
Yep.
The drunkard will talk about his one beverage that he enjoyed. It's Stone Excaveza. I believe I've had this before, but considering it's a winter spiced mocha stout, I figured I should drink it while it's still nominally winter around these parts. Even though it's not really winter in the mid 50s, so. at DeFrango 11, at Shaw Farm D, at Stunt Granny is the brand. Rate and review us on iTunes or SoundCloud, which Jeremy posts we watch stuff on. I think that about covers it. So have a good night, and I think you usually do a sign-off, so enjoy.
For Kevin DeFrango, I'm Shahida Dohati. And give love to the old-time part-timers. We are out.